Welcome to the Game Informer Show. I'm your host, Matt Helgeson. In lieu of our normal podcast, we actually are really excited. We have a special edition podcast, and we're happy to be joined by Todd Howard of Bethesda, and we are going to be talking about Skyrim, which was our big cover story, and we've done a ton of web content, and it's really blown up on the internet. People are super excited about the game. I'm joined by Matt Miller.
Hey, guys.
And Andy Reiner.
Yo, Matt.
And, we're going to be asking Todd some questions. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, Todd, I think you may have set our record for the most people who have made comments on a story ever on Game Informer's history.
I don't know if I should be excited or terrified.
A little of both.
There were over 1,600 comments, and many of them had multiple questions. And we've decided probably the best way to do that will just keep you on the phone and ask all of them.
Let's just go in order.
That's right. We'll just do every single
Even
one.
Even if they're redundant, ask them again.
But seriously, I mean, we had like. People are super excited about this game, man. I mean, even in the comments, I don't know if you saw any of those on the site, but the readers, I think they really wanted to like express to you how much they appreciate you sitting in to answer some of these questions, because some of these guys, like, they really care a lot about this stuff. I mean, one guy ended his kind of a long comment of several questions apologizing that he had so many questions, but he said it was because, and I quote here, he cared about the game a bunch. I think
a lot of people do. It's a series that has gone on for so long. It's a lot of people have grown up playing it, so it's important to them like it is to us.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I have a feeling that I'm not going to be able to answer a lot of the questions yet with like no comment. I'll do my best.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I think people in general just had these questions, and they want to know if you guys are ready to talk about that stuff. And if you're not, then you know that'll be that, and they'll just have to wait and see as the game continues to roll out.
Yeah, but you know, before we get going with that, I definitely wanted to, you know, you saying that how many people posted there, and our fans and the people who have supported us for a long time, they really are the best, and they get into it, and we're fans too, and you guys as well. Matt and Andy and Matt, like, it's really great for us when you're working on a game for a long time and you want to get it out there and get it out there in a good way. And I think everybody at Game Informer really also really got into it. And, like, the web content you guys did has just been superb. And it's exciting for us to see it, you know, come out in that way. I thought you guys have really done an awesome job with the content.
Well, thanks a lot, man. We like you said, we care a lot about the game, and we think you guys are doing great work over there. So it's a joy for us to get to help you kind of roll that stuff out and do some cool content.
Cool.
Yeah, Todd, I've been communicating with the Bethesda forums, the people there that are Skyrim fans, and they have one question, and it's kind of like a matter of life and death in the forums. It's the big question they wanted answered, and I'll kick off our questions with it. It is, are there going to be spears in the game? Like, seriously, these people are freaking out about it.
There are not spears in the classic spear sense. I'm sorry.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
We're off to a bad start.
There currently are not.
Well, you know, that does lead in, though, a little bit. A lot of the questions on the wider, about the kind of wider experience of the game, from numerous comments on the GI site were about kind of some of the weapon types in the game. And I'm curious, you know, if you're able to talk a little bit about some of the weapons. I mean, we've seen swords certainly are going to be a big part, and obviously you've got the spells now that you can put into either hand. Are there any other kind of hints you can give us about the directions of different, like, types of weapons people are going to be able to play with?
Sure. The main thing that I can say, and I see a lot of those comments, are They go back to, we had X weapon types in Daggerfall, then X weapon types in Morrowind. Oblivion has its own, and Skyrim has its own. And any time there's something that we stop doing, whether that's spears, having a skill for that, or crossbows and things like that, we tend to, each time, start over. And we want to find weapon types with this game that really yield gameplay. So those skills are separate. There's a two-handed weapon skill, there's a one-handed weapon skill, there's an archery skill, and then there's all the magic stuff. But we'll just deal with you know, basic combat, two-handed skill, one-handed skill, and archery, because those really are play styles. I'm going to use a one-handed weapon and then either cast magic with my other hand or use a shield, or I'm going to use a two-handed weapon where it's going to fill both those slots, obviously, two-handed. And within each of those skills, and this is another thing that I think has gotten confused when people hear there are perks. They'll say, well, there are perks like Fallout. Well, there are perks, but they're not like Fallout in that each skill has its own perk tree. So take one-handed, for instance. And the idea is, so you have a one-handed skill, and then you can perk that. There's a, you know, like a skill tree underneath one-handed. And within that, there are separate perk areas for maces, and then axes, and then swords. So as opposed to having, say, an axe skill, that is a part of the perk tree within one-handed. And we think that just, it gives us a better balance. So you can start like, well, I like one-handed stuff. And then you start specializing as you raise that skill. So within each of those trees, there are different weapon types that you can then get better at. I hope that all made sense.
Without
saying what they all are, but so that they actually have a gameplay difference. And something like spears, I think is really cool. It's just something with, you know, where we're putting our time with the other weapons. It just didn't make the cut right now.
Got it.
That was a very long answer to that question.
No, I know, but that's cool. I mean, it's good to hear you kind of elaborate a little bit more on the way that those perk systems works, because there's definitely people who are curious in all sorts of directions about, like, what, not just what's different between Oblivion and Skyrim, but what's changed between Fallout and Skyrim. And I know you talked to me before about the idea that, like, in a lot of ways, Skyrim's almost like a sequel to both of them, right?
It is for us, because it's the game we're making after Fallout 3.
Yeah.
And there are similarities between, you know, how you experience an open world game, how you play a character of your own choosing, or it's classless, and there's things that we learn and can take from each of those games.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, skipping over to kind of another general topic question that showed up a bunch of times. In fact, I think it was the very first question that one of our readers, a guy named Entheo, asked on the comments thing. You guys have had past experiences in the Elder Scrolls games where you could kind of like change form or be something different. Previously being a werewolf in Oblivion, there was kind of the vampire stuff. And right off the bat, he asked if you're able to be a werewolf in Skyrim. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, followed suit asking about similar things, if you could kind of like change form or anything like that. Is there anything along those veins that you can talk about?
I mean, I can say that we're fans of that stuff as well. And we are currently messing with all of that. So I don't want to commit to, here are the things you can change into and what they're like right now. Not because we're not doing it or not attempting to. I just don't know, honestly, where that's going to end up and how deep we're going to get into that.
Well, I can tell you,
a lot of times you'll hear this answer probably a lot. You know, we will try things, and if we don't feel it's helping the game, there are other areas we'd like to spend our time on in the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, there's definitely, I can tell you from our commenters, there's a lot of enthusiasm for that kind of stuff. So it's cool to hear that you guys are at least kind of exploring that possibility.
Yeah, and if you look at the Blood Moon expansion we did for Morrowind, which is probably the thing that we did that's closest to Skyrim and some flavor, you know, the main gist of that was you become a werewolf.
Right.
So we do have some experience doing that.
Right.
Not too long ago.
Right. Well, kind of another sort of broad thing that as I was going through the 20, 30 some pages of comments that showed up on this story, a question that kind of popped up a lot was people were curious about mounts. There were you know, horses you were riding around in Oblivion. Are we going to see a return to mounts, whether that's horses or some other type of creature or anything like that in Skyrim?
I think I'll have to give the exact same answer,
okay.
Which is something we're messing with, and we don't know where it's going to end up. There were things with the Oblivion horses. We like having them, but there are certain things. They weren't the greatest implementation of horses.
Okay.
And now you see games come out like Red Dead, or, you know, there are more horses in games, and we feel like just the basic implementation we did in Oblivion isn't going to be good enough. So we are currently attempting things with that, and I don't know where it's going to end up.
Sure. I mean, when you were looking at the Oblivion mounts, what were the things that stood out as being kind of problems for you that you wouldn't put into Skyrim unless you could fix?
Mostly, I would say controls and the feel of that you are not in some sort of battlefield jeep. You
okay.
are riding an animal. Do you know what I mean? Just the feeling of doing it. But they definitely, a world without them feels a little weird without seeing them. You know, having horses around or things like that. So we definitely want to have them. We don't know yet what you're going to be able to do with them and to what level.
Okay.
Well, either way, you have to have them to sell horse armor, right?
We're going to do that regardless.
Even if there's not horses, you should put horse armor up there.
The joke we tell
about the ground.
That's right. It just sits on the ground. It'd be so great.
Another common question throughout the 1,000+ questions was crafting. Are you going to be able to craft spells, potions, and other items?
We do have a lot of crafting. We do have crafting within each discipline now. So we do have smithing. Enchanting is back as a skill. And then alchemy, we're sort of treating as it doesn't matter that much anymore, but it is in our stealth category. Though we have sort of a blended skill list. So alchemy is like the most magical of the stealth skills. And then we have lots of other things you can just that are not skill based that you can craft that we're messing with from cooking and things like that. That's something else we're gonna talk more about later. That's all in the game now, and it's gonna go through a few changes. So I don't want to get too specific, but there is a lot of that and more emphasis on it this time around.
Hmm. You know, I know one thing that when I was down to see you guys at the studio that you were still kind of exploring what was stuff related to how spells would interact with each other and that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And I would suspect that the results of your experimentation on that stuff would affect whether you have anything that's like spell crafting, right?
Yeah, spell crafting is kind of it's a real wild card,
mm-hmm.
something that we've done a lot, and there are pluses and minuses to it. We'd like to find... We have some ideas that we really like on how to solve that, and I don't know where that's going to go. But the thing that we don't like about the previous systems that we've done is it becomes very spreadsheety, where it takes the magic out of magic, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So, I mean, you got to see the game, but your listeners haven't. But there's a bigger emphasis on how the magic physically acts, okay? So just a spell like fire. There are different spells for how the fire moves, like putting it down like a rune that explodes and you'll walk over it, or fire you can spray that lingers in the ground like you're spraying a wall, and you can spray the ceilings and it's there, or fire that travels like a flamethrower out of your hands, or a fireball that you charge up and throw and explodes at a distance. So, you know, our main goal is to make magic feel like this arcane, powerful thing. And once it goes into a spreadsheet in the game where you can just say, I want something at this distance and this power, it removes the illusion of like how this stuff actually works. And so we have some ideas of ways around that, but we don't know where those are going to go yet. We do have the benefit of we're really, really happy with how the magic plays in the game, both visually and mechanically, and then being able to do it with both hands, that there are opportunities there for combinations and things you can do without getting into the spreadsheet aspect of it, which I do know some people like. But it does take away from the impact of the spells that you're finding and mechanically how they work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it actually ties back to something you were talking about earlier, which was, you know, you've got, like, within the one-handed skill tree, you've got these different perks for, like, maces and axes and swords and so on. Within the magic system, is it kind of similar? Is it by school that you're perking up, or is it individually, like, I've got fire spells, and I'm going to perk the fire spells?
Well, there's the skill destruction, so right. That covers, like, a category of spells, and then right. Within destruction, there are perks for fire-based spells.
Right.
You know, so people see, okay, we've removed mysticism, but that's just a label, right? Those spells go into other skills,
right?
And then it gets deeper within those skills. The easy thing for us, going back to the previous conversation, is to just add more skills. That's actually a lot easier, because in the old games, it's just a skill and a number. There wasn't really, we didn't feel there was progression. What we really want is you really feel like you're getting better in this particular skill. And perks are the main way we do that now. I think the game right now has like 280 perks, if you include the ranks. So it's a lot.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you
even a character, sorry to jump in, even a character that raises all of their skills to 100, and they're played and they're like level 50, they've only got to pick 50 perks out of that two. They're very different characters.
Yeah.
And a lot of the power is in the perks, as opposed to the raw number of the skill. There's still some power in the raw number of the skill, just not as much as there used to be. That stuff has moved into the perks.
Got it. That's cool.
What about character creation options? How are races different from one another in this game?
So the main decision you make in the beginning is what race you're going to be, and that comes with, so you no longer pick a class, you just pick. You basically, in the beginning, pick what you're going to look like, and obviously the race is a big part of that. And that comes with certain skills increases. So certain races have different skills that are higher to start with, and then they also have either spells, depending on what race you picked, and or racial abilities. And I don't quite want to get into exactly what all those are, but that's how it works.
Sure. But, I mean, the from what I recall, the big distinction between Skyrim and Oblivion in regards to the character creation stuff is that you just don't have a class when you start out, right?
Correct.
So you're kind of a little bit more of a blank slate. Is that a fair description?
Right. What we found in Oblivion, you start the game, you pick your race, and you play for a while. Our intent was you played for a while, you got to, you know, figure out some skills, and then depending on how you played, it was like a half hour, 45 minutes in, one of the characters asks you, okay, what kind of class do you want to be? Here's my recommendation based on how you've been playing. And sort of our thought process was, what if that guy never asked that? I was perfectly happy right before then. You know, I was just playing the game and skills were going up, and so we just got rid of that. You just play, and your skills go up as you play, and the higher your skill, the more it affects your leveling. So it's a really, really nice, elegant system that kind of just self-balances itself, so what we found in Oblivion is people would play, and even though they played for a half hour and then they picked their class, it's still, in the scheme of the games we make, not enough time to really understand all the skills and how they work. So people would play, and the general pattern would be they play for like 3 hours and then, oh, I picked the wrong skills, I'm going to start over. So we got in this loop of, you know, a lot of the feedback was, I played your game for 3 hours and started over. And they weren't necessarily upset about that. But to us, who, you know, someone is making a game, you're like, oh, is there a way we can solve that? Is there a better way of doing it? And we think this is it.
Yeah. I'm on that topic of like those things that you're picking. You're saying you do get to kind of pick the way that you look. So I know that a bunch of the readers had also asked kind of about that. If I recall, you guys have some pretty robust tools in place this time around to even within a given race and gender to kind of really mess around with the way that you look, right?
Yeah, it we're really happy with how that's coming out. It's all new face system we did. And on one hand, you have less control than you had in Oblivion, but what you're doing looks cool.
Yeah.
You know, our joke was, Oblivion would have been better if we renamed the random button the ugly button on the face creator. Like that's solving it through design.
Right.
Like, you just get these kind of doughy, you know, we were trying procedural faces, and some of them are okay, and, you know, some of them go horribly wrong. So we've redone that completely, and really, really nice results. It's something simple like a nose. When you go to make your nose, we have a lot of pre-built shapes you can pick from,
right.
And then you can adjust the size and position of that as opposed to lots of fiddly sliders. And it just lets us sort of handcraft a lot of options that you can mess with that, you know, if you just start messing around, you're not going to end up with something that looks bad. Do you know what I mean? So all the races look pretty cool and unique.
That's awesome.
And Todd, I read a lot about and heard a lot about the dragon language that you guys created and all that stuff. What are the dragons going to be like in the game? Are there going to be different types? Are they going to be kind of the hardest enemy that you fight? Will you be able to ride them at some point?
Let's see, in order. There are...
What are the dragons like is the first question. And it's kind of been a common question throughout the comments we got.
That's a very, very general question, but I can tell you what we're going for is that if you're a fan of fantasy, you see a lot with dragons, and they've been a part of classic fantasy that we've never done. There was one that appeared in Redguard, but it wasn't done to the level that we would really want to see. And so we wanted to do them in a way that they were part of the world and put them on screen and fight them in a way that you conjure up in your head when you read fantasy that you haven't really seen in a game. And that's what we're trying to pull off, that they are these fierce beasts that they do become kind of boss fights, like a mix between a big daddy and a helicopter in Half-Life 2. and these things that you see coming, you're like, oh no. And so they are really difficult.
Are they kind of
kill.
Are they the big bads in this game? Are they the...
They're your
the
main.
Enemies
they're
that you
the,
fear the
they're
most.
They're the main. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Reiner.
Are they the enemies you end up fearing the most when you know, they fly down from the sky or whatever?
That's the intent. Oh yeah. We had a lot of backup plans for them when we were developing the game, because when you deal with a creature that big and its AI and how powerful it is, you know, how much can it fly? Can it land? Will it be able to do this? And we made a little team of people to work on dragons and put some of our best people on it, and they worked on it for 2 years, and
wow.
And they really came out like we got to go past the list we had and then more, and we're just ecstatic with how they came out. They can dive bomb and breathe fire down a street. They can get on the ground and march around now. They can pretty much go anywhere, so we can call them and do random encounters with them. And when they come, they generally now in the game just work. We can throw multiples of them in a scene. And they just, you can, when I get bored with the game, I just summon dragons and watch them terrorize the town. You know, it's just like, it's always cool. There are multiple types of them. As far as riding them, I would not expect that. It's not something I see happening. It's kind of not how we're approaching them, first of all.
Well, you can do that with the DLC, the How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
They're not, from everything you've told me about these guys, they're not exactly the friendliest sort.
No.
So
no.
Jumping up on one's back might not get the best results.
No.
Well, let me jump over for a sec. Another theme that kind of we're going through, as you can tell, some of the wider themes that showed up in a bunch of questions, and then maybe we'll have time for a few individual questions. But one thing that a bunch of people asked about was companion characters. That was a really fun and really cool part in Fallout, and I think folks are curious if you guys are approaching that in a similar way here in Skyrim, or kind of what's going on with that.
We are approaching it in a different way. I would not expect the deep personalities and uniqueness with a low number of companions. We are aiming for a much, much higher number, and of companions you could hire, or they become your friends and they come with you. It's something we're messing with, and we'll probably talk about more later, but the general direction is to make it a bit more dynamic and have more people that you could decide to bring with you. And in that, we sacrifice them having, because we have a larger number, we sacrifice them having a lot of depth or personalities or individual stories. And there still will be some like that, but that's kind of the direction we're headed right now.
Sure.
We don't know the exact number of NPCs in the world. It could be coming companion, but we're hoping it's a big number.
Well, and your Radiant story system, I would suspect, lets you do all sorts of interesting stuff with
exactly.
With companions.
Actually, we were playing the game a few months back where anybody could become your companion.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think we're going to do that
right.
after playing it. But with the Radiant story and the tools we have right now, we can pretty much do what we want. We just want to find the right balance so it plays nice and the player isn't confused or gets somebody to be their companion and takes them to a dungeon and it was just, oh, that was a worthless experience. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy we're kind of talking about that because across both comments here and, you know, asking you questions and in other stories, I think there's still people who are curious and are trying to understand a little bit more about what Radiant Story does. Have you come to a sense of, like, is there a short-form description of what that does for players in a general sense, why Radiant Story is going to be cool for people?
And the main thing that we want to be careful with Radiant Story is to not oversell it.
Yeah.
It's a tool that we use to make quests. And we started the game by making them all very, very random / dynamic. And you do see the holes in that. It doesn't tell, despite its name, Radiant Story, it doesn't tell a good story. you know, good stories are still told by good writers who put them together, and we do most of our quest lines that way. But
sure.
All of the quests are still done. Radiant Story is the tool you use to make any quest. And you can make all of the roles in that quest. You can handcraft all those roles, or you can take any part of the quest and conditionalize it. So what it allows us to do is to take parts of a quest or an activity and conditionalize it without having to hand script conditions. One of the examples that we've been using to sort of crystallize it for people is a common quest we would do in a game is you come to town and there's a guy who has a child that's been kidnapped and they're in a dungeon nearby. Well, with Radiant Story, we can do is just write that as a quest template, fill out the roles saying it's a guy in town who likes you, who has a child, and then the role for the location is a dungeon that fits this. And we can pick a dungeon that you haven't been to for some reason that's nearby. We don't know why you haven't been to it, but you haven't been there. So you walk into town, and the game just says, oh, there's a guy in town who likes you. We're going to kidnap his kid, who you might have met, and put him in this dungeon for some reason you didn't go to, and that dungeon happens to be a higher level dungeon, and so we think you could use a challenge right now, and the reward is going to be this other thing that your character can use. Doing that before is impossible, you know. But we have that opportunity right now, and so we tend to be using it. The more dynamic quests tend to be like little favor things that people ask you to do, not full blown quests. But if you were to play a quest, it's very hard for you to tell. It's going to seem very handwritten and. You know, you'd really have to compare notes with your friend to figure out the parts that particular quest decided to make dynamic. Because some quests have no dynamic elements, and some quests have more. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're still finding new things we can do with it every day. It's just a matter of getting that on the screen where the player is having a good experience and not seeing through the whole, like, oh, this is all just the same random thing over and over again, which we want to avoid.
Right. Well, I mean, the takeaway point for me really was that, like, your main story and, like, the plot that you guys are crafting is still done by hand.
Absolutely.
This is stuff that goes beyond that to make, you know, random events feel more personal to your character.
Right. Or when we're going to send you to do something, we can tailor that a bit to the things you've done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Another question that was asked dozens, maybe even hundreds of times is, will factions be returning? Like, a lot of the quests in Oblivion were handled through the different factions, like the Dark, you know, or Fallout and into the Dark Brotherhood kind of stuff. Will we see stuff like that in this game?
Yes, absolutely. We're doing factions, and that's definitely something we're going to be talking about later, not because we don't know, which is something we've decided to, like, well, that's a good thing to save till later because talking about so much other stuff right now.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But, I mean, I think there were a lot of people who were just curious if they're in. So they'll be reassured that...
Different than what we've done before.
Oh, yeah?
And what they are.
Okay.
But we definitely are having them.
Are there some that are returning, or is it all new ones?
There are some that are returning, yes.
Okay. Coolness. You know, there are a bunch of people who are doubting you about this release date thing, this whole 11-11-11. How committed are you to this number here? You feel pretty good about it right now?
We definitely do, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you know us, we actually tend not to announce release dates until later in the process.
Yeah.
You know, when we announced Fallouts, I think it was the summer, maybe E3 time, and we made that date.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very confident about it. There's still a lot to do in the game, but we wouldn't have announced it if we weren't really confident.
I think people are just honestly are just so excited about it. They're like, they want to be able to quite literally mark their calendar of like the day they're going to the game store. So
yeah, and it's a great date. You can't forget that.
It is pretty great.
It's great.
Yeah.
This is kind of a funny question, but it was asked many times over, and it's kind of interesting too. Why do characters always start in a prison?
Or as a prisoner.
Or as a prisoner, yeah.
Well, it started that way in Arena, and we did it again in Morrowind and Oblivion. There's a couple reasons for it. The first one is it started to become a tradition. Number two, I like this idea that there's a little bit of conflict in the beginning with you being a prisoner, and we never say why. So you immediately, when you start the game, in your head, tell a story of why you're in prison to yourself. And so I kind of like that about it. You know, if you think you're some good guy character, you're like, well, obviously they have the wrong person. I shouldn't be here, and I'm going to do something about it. So that's why. It's part tradition and part it lets you in your head tell a quick little story for yourself.
Sure. That's cool. Well, I want to hop into a couple of individual questions that I thought were interesting out of the many that I looked through, weren't touched on in some of those more general topics that we just kind of went over. One of the early questions that showed up on the first page of our comments was from a guy named Warbuff, and he or she asked about. How much? They said that they really loved Fallout 3, but they weren't like big Morrowind or Oblivion guys. And in this guy's case, wanted to know what aspects of Skyrim you think are going to appeal to a gamer like him. If there are things you're drawing out from Fallout and from kind of that modern day sensibility that should have him be excited about Skyrim.
That's a good question. I mean, if you really, really don't like Oblivion, I'm not sure. You know, I want to swing it to like sell the person, but if you really don't like Oblivion, I don't know that this is suddenly going to switch you over. But I would probably say, I'm kind of thinking here, one of the things that Fallout 3 does well is there's a certain tone to the world, there's a certain uniqueness to it, it has style. Oblivion, for what it is, can be very kind of classic, traditional fantasy. There's not a lot of unique style to the world, or what, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Skyrim, I definitely think, has a unique style. We got better at that, and we push it, like, what is the culture of these people? So it has its own flavor. It's definitely grittier. It's lower tech. The world's lived in. The ruins feel ancient and thousands of years old. So we're also careful in Skyrim about the various ages of when was this built? This is this old, this is this old. Where Oblivion can run everything looks like it was built in the same, you know, every building in this town was built on the same day, like pre-planned amusement park. So I do think there's a more unique and better flavor to the province of Skyrim and the game Skyrim than we had in Oblivion and Cyrodiil.
Got it. We actually had another reader who inadvertently, I think, kind of dovetails with that question. I'm sure he's somebody who, this guy's somebody who's played Fallout, because he asked if Skyrim's going to have multiple endings, and if, like, your choices are going to affect those. That was a big part of kind of the Fallout experience. Is that something you guys are interested in exploring in Skyrim?
I don't really want to answer the ending of the game question.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm going to pass on that question.
Fair enough.
It ends with a werewolf holding a spear riding a dragon.
Right.
I think we should just assume that that's probably what it's going to be.
Spend money for this DLC.
We seriously have like a phone book here of questions.
Yeah, we're just looking
we're
through.
Paging through it.
You know, another thing that showed up a couple times, I'm looking at a particular question from a guy who calls himself Bioshocker. And he's curious about like the actual geography of the world and how kind of expansive Skyrim will be. He thought Oblivion was pretty big. Mm-hmm. Is Skyrim sort of a comparable geography?
So as far as actual landmass, it's about the size of Oblivion.
Okay.
It's different in that a lot of it, I don't want to say a lot, there's a good portion of it that is mountainous.
Okay.
And mountains you just can't walk across, so they kind of inflate your game space.
Mm.
So if you have this large mountain, getting up and through that and around that, and then the dungeons that are on the mountain, they tend to compress, the parts of the world that have mountains tend to get, I don't know if you'll use the word compress or expand. You spend more time there, so it does feel, when you're walking around it, to us it feels a bit bigger because of the mountains.
Okay.
And we were, really pushing to have it not just be this big snowy mountain game, the whole game, so that we do have a lot of different regions. So another thing we pushed, we have maybe 5 or 6 regions, and they all have a really unique look while still being part of that province, from pine forest to fall forest to tundra and volcanic tundra, and then the mountains with the snow, and then the glacier area and things like that.
This is kind of an interesting question from 10 level. He asks, is there any particular ESRB rating that you guys are aiming for?
We never aim for a specific rating. I would be I don't want to say anything then, because I'm sure it'll be M. But we never aim for a specific rating.
You are killing a lot of dudes.
And I would be surprised if we did not get an M.
Our
assumption is we're getting an M, so we are doing the content that we think is appropriate. Not for an M. We're doing the content we think is appropriate for Skyrim.
Sure.
So there is more violence to the combat, just in how it looks. Not like Fallout violence where it gets really over the top. It's more, as much as we're doing, it's more realistic level of violence.
Okay.
For what it is, with, guys and swords and axes and those kinds of things.
Okay. Well, we had another reader, a guy named GLO7008, who wanted to know if there is a HUD. And if not, how the health system will work? How are you able to kind of tell how your character's doing, that kind of thing?
There is a HUD. I think he's commenting on a line in the article where it says the game is HUDless. It comes and goes as needed.
Right.
So there is a small compass bar at the top that right now is always there for direction. And the other, your magicka, your health, and your stamina, or other things, come up when they need to. So if you're just walking around the world and your full health, your health bar isn't on the screen. It just doesn't need to be. So we want to keep it HUDless as much as possible. But as soon as someone hits you and your health drops at all, the health bar shows up, and then once it's full for a period of time, it goes away. It's that kind of paradigm.
Okay. Got it. I think there were a few different people. We talk a lot these days, I think, about a game from the console perspective, but we definitely had some readers who were curious about kind of the PC direction.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we had one guy, Count Chocula here, wanted to know if there are any plans to release an X64 version of the game for PC players. We had some people asking about high-resolution textures, if you know that, those were things that that would have to be modded in. A bunch of people were just kind of curious in general about the PC experience. Do you guys have like a dedicated group that's working on the PC version? You work on them together? How does that work out?
Well, we work on it together, and the main thing for people to know is our background is PC games. The game is authored here on PCs. That's what we work on. So a lot of the team is playing the game on PC all day. We do want the platforms to each have a really, really high level of fidelity. I personally play a lot on the Xbox. It tends to be my preferred platform. We do a lot of graphics development still first on the Xbox just because it's smoother. And a lot of that stuff does go over to the PC. The PC, you know, I don't want to comment on specific whether it's processors or different types of things. We tend to do as much as we can as the project goes on because we want to support as wide a range as possible. We also tend to do that stuff late because right now we want to work on the main game and how it plays and getting the graphics fast everywhere. And then as the project gets closer to release, we start supporting all those other things.
You'll definitely
be able to run the PC at a much higher resolution. All of our games that we've done so far, so I don't want to commit on this, but I'll just say all of the games we've done, you know, Oblivion, Fallout 3, Morrowind, the PC versions have higher res textures they ship with, by default. And a lot of times you don't notice that because when you play a console game, you are sitting, 6 to 10 feet away from the screen.
Right.
Whereas in the PC, you're sitting a foot, 2 feet away from the screen. Those kind of differences in texture resolution, you don't notice except if you're looking at two screenshots on a computer and flipping between them. So I guess at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is we are going to support that stuff. I can't say how far. But the same thing with the interface. We do a lot of PC interface stuff, so if you're reading about the interface, there are uniquenesses to how we handle it on the PC.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Another question, just as I'm kind of scrolling through our pages here, that a couple people asked about, that is something I'd be curious about your thoughts on too, is your philosophy towards achievements and trophies. What do you think about those systems, and how do you want them to work in Skyrim?
I mean, we love them. we definitely do them with all of our games, and I think our general approach is to have a mix. If you look at the mix in Fallout 3 between specific quests and leveling or collection achievements, that kind of balance was pretty good. We have to do it differently this time because there are a lot more. We have a lot more quests. So we like to have a balance of specific quests that are important or quest lines, and then just general gameplay stuff. You know, meet this, get to this level, collect X gold, do this. So we like to have a nice mix of that stuff.
Cool. Well, I think I know the answer to this question, but just so that we kind of get it out there on the record, what is there any chance that you guys are going to do Kinect support, Move support, 3D, any of that kind of stuff, any of these sort of new emerging technologies connected to Skyrim?
There's a quote, what is the movie, Dumb and Dumber, where he goes, so you're saying there's a chance. I guess there's a chance. I would doubt, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But both of those systems, 3D, I would be surprised. Both Kinect and Move, they're fairly new systems as of last year. And you look at something like the Kinect, Microsoft's still updating what it can do, how it handles things, how the libraries work, same with Move. So there might be something that we end up doing that we think fits. But at this point it would surprise me because we do want to keep our focus on the main game.
Got it.
So.
Got it. This was another thing that that I remember you talking a little bit about, and we talked a little bit about in the article, but just to kind of to hear it from you, that when you start off with your character, he doesn't know that he's Dragonborn. Is that right?
Correct.
And so that's sort of. Can you tell us a little bit about like what's going on there? That is occurring in the game, and like how that comes about.
I don't want to spoil it too much.
Yeah.
But he does find out. There's an event that happens with a dragon, where you find out you're Dragonborn. And I think for anybody listening, it won't matter because they know. You know, it's one of those marketing things. You say, well, are we gonna, you know, what percentage of the audience who puts the game in knows I'm Dragonborn?
Right.
Before they press play, it's probably gonna be pretty high.
Sure.
We try not to take that into account, so it still feels right in the game. But I don't necessarily want to spoil it. I may have told you when you were here, Matt.
Sure.
Did I?
You talked a little bit about it. There were a couple things that I think you had said, like, you know, this is kind of the direction we're going. We don't want to go into a whole lot of detail about it. And you know, there was so much other great info that we had that we were trying to get into the
right.
that I was trying to get
I
into the article that, you know.
I'd like to kind of keep it a secret, but there is an event that happens and you find out.
Right.
And then the Greybeards, well, this also is kind of cool. The Greybeards, the guys who live up on the throat of the world, who are the masters of the voice.
Right.
When they find out about this fairly quickly, and they shout your name, so they shout Dovahkiin to the wind, and it kind of rumbles through the world. You know, it's like the mountain shake when they call you. and you think to yourself, what was that? Someone said that was the Greybeards calling you to walk the 7,000 steps up the throat of the world to meet them.
Right, which you said, you promised me
and
you're going to have 7,000
cool.
steps, right?
I have been promised 7,000 steps, and I'm going to count them. Yes. Our world artists are amazing. We have just an amazing team, and they put so much detail on the world. So they didn't blink when I said it must have 7,000 steps.
Sure, sure.
And I was like, "Who's going to count?" Now I've like challenged everybody to count.
somebody will
count.
Told. You know that now, especially now that we're talking about it.
I expect them to. Yes.
There's going to be people who sit there for 5 hours one day, and just go through and.
My view is, if you look at all the stuff we have in the world, 7,000 steps is not significantly, you know, it's not that hard.
Right, right, right.
Todd, I think we have one more question for you.
Okay.
We've obviously kept you very long here. We've probably delayed the game a day. So it's now 11, 12, 11. We can announce that here.
Yeah, there was one more, you know, for not picking the ones that people asked that I'm sure we'll get crucified for a few days coming up here, but you know, one other thing that people were kind of curious about that I did want to have you kind of clarify for them in case we didn't make a good case for it in the article or anything like that was to explain how kind of the leveling system works, particularly in relation to like the maximum level, and how what your philosophy is towards that. How long can you level in the game? When does it become basically impossible to continue leveling? That kind of thing.
I would say to people, it works like Oblivion, where there is no... We don't code in a maximum level. There is a theoretical maximum, depending on what your skills are. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the one change we've made is that you level faster. We sort of balance Oblivion and Fallout 3 in some respects to like a 1 to 25, 1 to 30. So people who play it, if they play for a long time, that's the kind of high level with creatures and whatever. This one is balanced like 1 to 50, but that isn't longer in gameplay. That is, you do level faster, a lot faster, particularly in the beginning of the game.
Okay.
Because of the way we're handling perks, we wanted to, because a lot of the power is in the perks, we wanted to be giving them out, you know, at a higher rate when you're playing. So we do talk about this as a 1 to 50 game. But, I mean, I'd have to go, once we play it more, the actual, like, maximum, depending on your particular character, how it works out, might be 75. You know what I mean? It might be 75. I don't really know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we don't code in. This is the maximum level.
Right.
It'll
right.
end up whatever it ends up.
Well, and I liked when I was talking with you about it once before, your explanation of the fact that you've got these perks now that you're choosing, and it's kind of one of the big things that you're kind of that's sort of allowing you to shape your own character. And as far as you guys were concerned, it's more fun to have more perks, right? And so, like, in those early levels, to
get through
those.
It is. It's the thing you're always shooting for.
Right.
So if you design your game, say, 1 to 25 levels.
Yeah.
And obviously it slows down. Even 1 to 50, it slows down a lot as you play. And you assume there's 200 hours of content. Well, you can sort of figure out, like, how often do I get to level?
Yeah.
And we think we can balance that with the perks. Well, that's what happened. We did the perks and then figured out quickly, well, we need to be, to make these work, we need to be leveling faster. And it's just, it is more fun.
Got it. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that covers as many bases as I think we probably are going to be able to. I know there's lots of things in there that remain unanswered, but undoubtedly the bright side of that equation is that, like, the longest anybody's going to have to wait to get their answers is what, at this point, 8-9 months, I guess? 9 months?
It's still a long time, yeah.
It's still a long time, but they've got a concrete end of the line.
Exactly.
It sounds like that they're going to get their answers.
And with this time, with doing it, we can sort of, you know, tell everybody, we do have a nice slate of when we're going to be releasing what kind of information, and we want to kind of keep it, since it is compressed this time for us, to the 9 months, whatever it is from now, we can do it at a pretty good rate and be getting lots of new information out there.
There are some people who are pretty excited to see gameplay of this game. You know that, right?
Yeah, and it's not too far off. Yeah.
That's good to know.
Well, hopefully we'll get a little of that on GameInformer.com and video form.
Definitely.
Soon. Well, thanks a lot, Todd. We really appreciate
thanks,
your time and everything that you guys have done for us in terms of all our web content. And people have really enjoyed it. The hits have been through the roof. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks what you've done for us. Honestly, it's you know, you always want your game shown in the best light and go through a great filter, and you guys knocked it out of the park. And to all our fans and our forums and your guys' site, it's really exciting for us too, to have it out there and talk about what we're working on. It just fuels. You can just tell the energy in the studio has gone up a lot on the game.
Well, that's great to hear.
Absolutely, and again, thanks to all the readers that submitted questions. I know that we didn't have time to get to everyone's questions. We tried to consolidate them into some of the broader topics so as to cover as many people's concerns as possible. But with the sheer sort of volume of responses we got, it just wasn't possible. But that's also, once again, I think, an indication of how excited people are and the level of enthusiasm there is for Skyrim, which is obviously very high. So thanks again, and it's been nice talking to you, Todd.
Thank you.
We will be back next week with a regular edition of the Game Informer show, and we will see you then.